Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Thursday show. I am Gary Gramling. I'm going to be joined in just a moment by Connor Orr. But this week's show, we're doing something a little bit, a little bit more meat and potatoes, a little lighter, I guess you would call it. We're gonna talk about human resources and the hiring process and all that stuff. And well, mostly we're going to talk about the 24 names that Connor Orr has put out there as a head coaching candidates to keep an eye on as we near that time of year.
It's crazy that we're here again. And really, I mean, people refer to it as Black Monday, but it's not Black Monday anymore. It's like half the teams are firing their coaches right after Thanksgiving to give themselves a leg up on the start. And the other half are going to do it on Sunday. And we're going to know after their last game, you know. So really, it's coming up. I mean, we're just a mere couple weeks away from knowing who some of these teams are hiring as their new head coach. It's pretty surprising.
Yeah, we have one job open. That is the Carolina Panthers.
Two. Washington.
Washington. Oh, that's right. Washington. Bill Callahan's been coaching for so long. He's he's like a veteran coach there.
They've already talked themselves into keeping him.
It's what one job not open is Detroit. So there could be, I guess, 31 jobs open by the end. Matt Patricia might be the only guy who retains his job, but we do know Matt Patricia is coming back for next season, as well as Bob Quinn out in Detroit. And I don't know, figure we'll have the typical six or seven going here, and we're going to talk less about the potential openings and more about the guys who might fill those openings. And like I said, Connor, 24 guys out there, and we're just going to straight up, we're going to run one by one here. And discuss each one of these guys. And we're going to start with, I think, my favorite guy, and I think your favorite guy. I know my favorite guy. Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, who it just feels like an absolute lock he's going to get hired somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I've been making a version of this list since 2015, and I think every year since 2017 he's been on this list, and this is the first time that everything's sort of aligned for him, where it's a top defense, it's a good team, and his visibility gets to expand. And you know, whenever I make these coaching lists, you have to think like an owner, which maybe isn't the most sensible way to think, but you know, here's the checklist. You have to have a guy from a successful organization, a guy that's had some good internships and been associated with good coaches, and you have to have a guy that's going to win that opening press conference. And Saleh checks all your boxes there. And I think I mentioned in the piece, I mean, you've seen this too. He's shown more than Kyle Shanahan during 49ers games. He is the most, like, he's the most visible part of the 49ers sideline during games.
He is. We ran that one photo of him with the 49ers cover story a couple of months ago, where he just I think Klemko just flat out said, like, he looks like a superhero. Like he just he does. He checks a lot of boxes. Obviously, you know what he's done with that defense this year, and you know, obviously adding Nick Bosa to that defense is a difference maker. But the jump they made, and I kind of pointed out last year, they were not a defense that was built to force a lot of turnovers, but the fact that they only forced seven was, I mean, that's just fluky. That is, I mean, that was a historic low by a wide margin. So you had some tough luck along with, you know, basically having a pretty shaky offense opposite them last year. And this year you kind of saw what they were supposed to be. And but I don't think it's like overwhelming talent on the defensive side of the ball there. I think it's good talent, and I think it's talent that really, and I know he has a voice in the war room, it really fits what he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's what all of these, and you know, I've talked to a couple people who were on that initial Shanahan staff, and some of them are spread out now, and some of them are in other places, but that was the goal all along, was to create one of the first and only true streamlined processes from draft to roster. And it doesn't work that way. It's crazy that it doesn't work that way, but there's 28 other teams in the NFL where it doesn't work that way, where the coach basically, it's a Christmas morning and he just finds out what he got, you know, and he's got to deal with it. But I think that's another appeal to me if I'm an owner, is that Saleh is going to have an insight on that process, how you talk to your GM and get him to pick the guys that you need and that fit what you want to do. And people can say, oh, well, obviously they just had like five first round picks on the defensive line. What's so hard about that? Well, it is difficult. You need the you know, different body types, different things to do, different support on the back end to help them if the rush doesn't get there. And he's had a voice in that and has helped really create what they've done here.
Let's switch over to the offensive side of the ball here. We'll go to Kansas City. Eric Bieniemy, who, I mean, look, he got very little attention last year, despite being the offense coordinator for just an unstoppable offense. You figure this time around he's going to get a much longer look from a lot of teams around the league, especially with Andy Reid talking him up.
Andy Reid said in the first week of December, hire him. I don't know what else I have to tell every owner in the NFL is to go out and get him. I mean, you know, and, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, Andy has talked up Bieniemy's increased work with the quarterback position, which definitely helps some of these guys get some exposure. But I think it would be crazy. I mean, this tree has been stripped. I mean, Andy loses two or three good assistants every year. And why wouldn't you want the next offensive coordinator, the next great guy in line? And, you know, you could make an argument, you know, okay, well, does he call the plays? Does he do stuff like this? Blah, blah, blah. But I like the idea of the fact that his experience was rooted in the run game, because, you know, you look at some of the guys that we'll talk about later from San Francisco and some of the other places, run game coordinator isn't a bad place to go. I mean, yeah, you know, that sets up the entire offense. You can get 100 guys to work with your quarterback and make them better, but to set up the infrastructure of the offense, everything still works, you know, through the running game in the NFL, and I think that his experience there is valuable too.
Yeah, I was going to say, in coordinating a run game, I mean, you have to have everyone doing their job properly. Not that your quarterback is completely out there alone, but, you know, as we've seen, there are quarterbacks who can make plays with other guys making mistakes. I mean, run game, for a run play to work, you really have to have the entire team executing properly.
It's like back when Ben McAdoo was hired, I remember there was like this odd blip in the radar for the NFL. It was like tight end coaches are going to become trendy because they have to work with quarterbacks, offensive line, and wide receivers, and they have to know all that triangle in the offense. I would argue that I would like a guy that works on the run game with Andy Reid, because outside of Greg Roman in Baltimore, Andy's the only other one that's doing a lot of these, you know, really creative sort of, you know, these trap blocking sort of different things to that level that that we're seeing it's super successful in the NFL. He's a part of all that, you know, and he's part of that brain tree. He's got a copy of the playbook. I think he's another slam dunk hire. We've already heard him mentioned in Washington as a potential candidate. I wouldn't take that job if I were him, but you know, I think he's definitely another guy that we're going to see off the board pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say, last time it was sort of an overlooked Andy Reid offense coordinator who got hired and no one was excited about it was Doug Peterson.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Let's go up to Buffalo. Not a whole lot of exposure for that Bills staff, but maybe now that they're winning games in primetime, that will change. But Brian Daboll has been, and look, he comes from both the Saban tree and the Belichick tree, so that sort of catches people's eye to begin with. But also what he's done with Josh Allen, who is a unique quarterback, a different kind of quarterback, a guy who sort of requires some problem solving on the account of your offensive coordinator.
Totally. I mean, I got to visit with him back in August, and, you know, I thought what was so smart all preseason long was they weren't letting Josh Allen hand the ball off in the preseason. It was like, you know, you're going to play three games and you're going to throw the ball 17 times a game and we're going to figure this out before the start of the regular season. And I would argue that his work with Josh Allen is sort of like, it reminds me of how the Steelers had handled Ben Roethlisberger early on, where he went from a turnover machine with no offensive line help to a sort of high-end game manager, and then there was another step from there. We're in that second phase right now with Allen, but I think that he is super smart at knowing what to hand over to the quarterback, knowing how much to put on people's plates, and like you said, he's got a foot in both of those worlds. I love the fact that he had that time down in Alabama, and I think that's going to mean something to people. He was on our list last year as well, and just another one of those underrated good names that I think if you don't pick his brain and at least kind of figure out what he knows, I think you're wasting your time this offseason.
One more guy who has done exceptional work with a unique young quarterback, Greg Roman. Greg Roman is like, this is like the revival. This is the renaissance. He got some head coaching buzz coming out of San Francisco, never got a job, sort of disappeared, and now he has reemerged with what he's done with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore as offense coordinator there. And I guess it just sort of raises the question, if you... And not everyone's going to have a Lamar Jackson, but if you have a quarterback with some unique skills and sort of non-traditional skills, and you want a guy to come in and sort of build this thing around him, it seems like Roman's kind of your guy.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll get to this later on because I made this point about two Eagles coaches that I put on this list as well. If a team has a bad year, you can still hire a guy. And it was remarkable to me that Roman gets passed over in San Francisco. He's still a good coach. That doesn't change anything. He's still imaginative. He's still connected with a lot of smart people who inject him with new ideas every offseason. And, you know, he had a bad couple years in Buffalo, and it kind of fell off the radar a little bit. But that doesn't make him a bad coach. That just makes him a coach in an unfortunate, circumstance. And so now everybody's going to have to wait in line to talk to him this offseason when you could have had him for pennies on the dollar probably 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, you're right. I mean, creative guy, someone who's done some really smart things, visiting with Paul Johnson, the godfather of the triple option this offseason. Remember, he was one of those original guys making the pilgrimage down to Chris Alt at Nevada to figure out the pistol and, all the stuff that could do. Give me a coach who does that 10 times out of 10, because then it just doesn't get stale. It's not a system. It's just a kind of a free-flowing series of ideas, and I would so much rather that than somebody who says, this is my offense, and you have to just hire me to install that.
Kind of the complete opposite, the yin to Greg Roman's yang here. Kevin Stefanski, younger guy, running an old school offense in Minnesota, and there had been some sort of low level buzz about Stefanski, and the Vikings weren't going to let Stefanski get out there and get hired as a coordinator, and that sort of played into the reason that they were so quick to move on from John DeFilippo. But you've seen what Stefanski, with the help of Gary Kubiak, but this is a whole lot of Stefanski with what he has done with the Vikings offense this year in his first full year as offensive coordinator there.
Yeah, had an interview with the Browns last year, so got on the radar a little bit in that sense. Pat Shurmur wanted him in New York to be his offensive coordinator, and I think that's, like you said, that's kind of how all this stuff went down. But I like what he's done, and I think that Kirk Cousins has talked up his ability to kind of elevate the play action a little bit, which makes their offense run. He's a coach that can appease Mike Zimmer's feverish desire to run the ball 40 times a game and still air it out and pacify Adam Thielen and Stefon Diggs. He's a problem solver. And, I think as bad as the offense, or as sort of stuck in the mud as the offense looked over the first 2 weeks, he figured it out. And I think a lot of other coordinators would have folded during that time where Diggs and Thielen were complaining about not getting the ball. And, Kirk Cousins threw 8 passes, I think, or 9 passes the first week of the season to where he is now, where I think that there was a legitimate anger toward him not making the Pro Bowl as a quarterback when the rosters were announced yesterday. So really interesting guy under the radar. Vikings are another favorite sort of landing spot for not the favorite, but one of the favorite landing spots for these search firms when they crawl in and they try to find good organizations, safe organizations to pluck assistance from. Vikings are a good place to look, good place to start. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely a no-brainer. I would not be surprised at all to see him get interviews this offseason.
All right, so Josh McDaniels, and we talked about this last offseason too, around this time last year. Teams really don't seem to be scared off. I'm sure there are a couple who were so put off by what happened in Indianapolis that they'll just not consider him. But as a whole, the league is not, basically blacklisting Josh McDaniels at this point.
No, and he almost reminds me a little bit of Roman in that I like the idea that Patriots offenses take on 3 or 4 different personalities over the course of a season, and that's what you want. you want that guy to present something that your the opposing defense isn't going to know what hit them every week. And I like the idea that McDaniels has done that. Working under Brady and Belichick is not something that's easy. I don't know what the sense of the Patriots' assistants are around the league at this point. That might be something hard for an owner to get his head around. If Patricia's not succeeding, if everything's not working out with Brian Flores in Miami, might be a tough time to pull the trigger there. But if you're a coach that's nervous and you need to make a hire on the safe side and you have a veteran quarterback, I think all those things line up where you have to at least bring him in.
Yeah. Let's go down to Dallas. We got two names here to discuss. Kellen Moore, I don't know. I don't know if the narrative's necessarily changed with him. Oh, I guess it has a little bit. It was a lot of whiz kid stuff first 3 weeks of the season, and then as the Cowboys started to lose games, even though the offense was not an issue this year for the Cowboys, really, except for the occasional situational football type of thing popping up, which maybe fell on the head coach a little bit more. But Kellen Moore, I mean, look, he revamped this offense, and it's something a whole lot better in Dallas now.
Yeah, I mean, if you go by DVOA, which is kind of how, it's at least one of the easier, catch-all stats that I think measures offensive efficiency, they have, behind Baltimore, the second-best offense in football this year. And Dak Prescott was a legitimate Pro Bowl quarterback, even though I got a ton of flack for tweeting that yesterday. who are you going to pick him over? Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to take him over Aaron Rodgers in the Pro Bowl this year. He had a better season. And I don't think that while Dak, I think, is getting better independently, I don't think you can separate necessarily Prescott's rise totally from what Moore has brought in offensively. This is definitely a guy that's probably a year or two away, but we've seen people hire 31-year-olds now, and it works for at least a little while. So, I mean, it's one of those things where the optics of if Jason Garrett ends up losing his job at the end of the season, the optics of bringing in either Kellen Moore or another Cowboys coach that we're going to talk about might be difficult, but I think you at least have to pick his brain, and that's part of the process here is just learning what these guys do well. So,
and the other coordinator in Dallas, Chris Richard. I mean, he's a guy who's gotten buzz in the past. I mean, he was on that Seattle staff, and everyone liked him there, and then it sort of it fizzled out there, and he's back in Dallas, and it's been kind of an up and down year. He's taken over defensive play calling duties for the Cowboys from Rod Marinelli, and I don't really know if the play calling has been an issue with his defense at times. They haven't tackled in certain games, but overall, it's. I mean, look, you get why Chris Richard is getting some buzz as a head coaching candidate.
Well, it's like Saleh, but a little different because they come from that cover three Bible. But what I'm interested in is guys like Saleh and Richard who have put their own twist on it, because it's still sort of the most effective way to, and this is a really blanket statement, but sort of still the most effective way to counter a lot of what we're seeing on offense. But it requires some imagination. And I think that guys who have been in it for as long as they have at least have the ability to streamline the defense a little bit, so that's why I like him there. And like Saleh, he's energetic. I mean, the players like him. Dallas saw something in him to not only hand over the play calling duties, he started taking over a lot of the press conference stuff for coordinators, which was sort of their acknowledgement that, hey, we want him to kind of be the face of the defense a little bit. So yeah, I mean, all those things are positive checks, I think, in his column. And who knows, if they turn it around and they win one or two games in the playoffs, then we're talking about a legitimate coaching candidate.
Brett Bielema. He has just had a fascinating career at this point.
It's so interesting, right? I mean, running a powerhouse program at Wisconsin, going to Arkansas in the SEC, and then resurfacing as sort of that trendy Bill Belichick analyst role where, the mystery coach, and then eventually getting elevated to defensive line. I've seen some other people. Tom Pelissero does a really good job over at NFL Network making his coaching list. And I think he had, Gerard Mayo, the linebackers coach, as a potential candidate. I think somebody from this defense is going to get interviews, but there's no real coordinator, and I don't think Steven Belichick is quite there yet. So, my line of thinking there is who's kind of next, right? Who's kind of obvious. Yeah. And what a kind of a positive in Brett's column is that he's connected in that college world where I think arguably you'd want your offensive coordinator to come from. And he's got an eye on this defense, the best defense in football this year. And for a while, for 8 weeks, the best defense in NFL history, you know?
Yeah, it's it'll make some blood boil down in Fayetteville, Arkansas when they think about Bielema getting NFL head coaching interviews here. But this is another guy who's really interesting because you know, you hear whispers that he's an absolute favorite of Sean McVay. That's Shane Waldron, the passing game coordinator for the Rams. I guess when you look at it, you know, has the sheen sort of come off the Sean McVay assistant type of candidate here?
That's going to be the big thing this offseason, right? Is did we hire too many of these guys? You know, I don't think, and really what a good owner would do anytime is separate the guy from the system and have a way to figure out what he or she knows specifically and not what they're able to steal from something that's already successful. And so that's why I kept, you know, I didn't get rid of anybody from my list from September because, you know, I wanted to update some of these names. Shane was obviously on the list earlier in the season. If we had made one in December, I'm not sure if he would have been, but I think he's still somebody that you have to bring in because I think there are still some good ideas out there. I think if Sean McVay trusts you with a lot of responsibility, that says something. And listen, the Rams aren't a bad team. They're just having a bad, you know, kind of a rocky year. They're still going to finish above 500 and they made it to the Super Bowl a year ago. So I think that's another person that at least merits some consideration.
I was going to say they would be on the verge of clinching the NFC East if they were in the correct division here.
Yes, seriously.
Nick Sirianni, the offense coordinator for the Colts, and look, I've been violently shaking any Colts fan I can find who is complaining about this year's team, which legitimately could have been a 10-win team with better kicking. And Lord knows what's happened to that receiving core when you got Zach Pascal and some of these other guys as really your only even usable receivers out there. But this staff, especially the offensive side of the ball, they kept this team afloat after the Andrew Luck retirement. And I don't know, that there's something to be said for what they've done in 2 years with that Colts organization.
I think the way that Frank Reich helped run the system in Philadelphia was so attractive to me because of how empowered and properly delegated everything is. And, you know, if you looked at that Super Bowl team that he was the offensive coordinator of, everybody had a role, everybody had a piece of the game plan, everybody was on the same page. And it seems like that's how he's running the staff in Indianapolis, too. And that's what you want to replicate if you're an owner, right? Like, you want a guy that knows other smart people and knows how to delegate. And, you know, I think that that's someone that I would be really interested in talking to. Never mind just the optics of look how much good they did with a backup quarterback after losing their franchise quarterback to a freak retirement in August. I mean, the fact that they were able to handle all that in itself is good. And if you're also hiring a GM, I like the idea that maybe he's connected or comes in lockstep with somebody from that front office because there's a lot of interesting things going on there as well.
Dave Tobe, I mean, you will stand on the table for this guy every year.
Yeah.
He is. And look, special teams coordinators do not get like serious consideration as head coaches, even though John Harbaugh has won a Super Bowl. Bill Cowher, you know, Cowher had a couple of defensive gigs between his special teams job in Cleveland. But I mean, those are guys with special teams backgrounds who went on to become Super Bowl winning coaches, and not fluky Super Bowl winning coaches, like consistently top of the league coaches.
Yeah, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's just a stupid trope that owners want to win press conferences, and it's hard to say, hey, this is the guy that controls the kicking and punting for the Chiefs, and, you know, and it almost makes it look like, well, we couldn't get anybody else. But it's not true. I mean, Tobe was a good interim head coach. You know, he had interim head coaching experience, and I believe everybody when they say that, you know, it's valuable because you work with every position. You're more connected to the 53-man roster than any other coach on the team, because, you know, you have to work with offensive guys, defensive guys. You have to be a technician because a lot of these people don't have, specific skills relative to special teams when they're coming into the league, because they're all good players on their college teams that have to relearn how to do some of this stuff, like be a gunner or, you know, shed a block or do all this kind of stuff. And so I like it. You know, I've talked to a player or two that he's coached in the past, and, you know, everyone says the same thing. It's just, you need to hire this guy because, you know, it might not be the sexiest thing, but he's a guy that can build an organization, and he's well respected too. He's not going to struggle like some of these younger coaches in finding other people to come and work for him. He's going to have a Rolodex, and he's going to be associated with other good offensive and defensive guys. I mean, look at the pool of talent he's going to have to pick from if he wants an offensive coordinator to bring with him for the Chiefs. There's two or three guys that could probably do that job right now and come with him and build a staff.
Let's talk about two Eagles guys. You have the offensive coordinator, Mike Groh, and then the quarterback's coach, Press Taylor, Zach's brother. You know, this is obviously the Eagles have had better years, but it's another team that has really been crippled by injuries to the receiving core. These guys are still, it's a good organization. They are in the hunt despite everything that's gone on there this year. And I don't know. I mean, you figure they're still going to get some sort of attention when it comes to, teams picking out who they're going to interview here.
This might be stubbornness on my part, and maybe they don't get interviews this season, but I think, you know, it's the point that I've sort of belabored to this point, but, you know, don't just overlook a team because they haven't had a good season. Like, you know, both of these guys were super important in the Eagles Super Bowl run. They were doing innovative stuff then. They're doing innovative stuff now, but they only have one healthy wide receiver on their roster. So you can't punish them for this. And so I just think it's dumb that, you know, everybody's going to, you know, strip the Kyle Shanahan tree, which is a good idea. I mean, he's a good head coach, but you're just going to ignore all the other good stuff out there because you want to sell to your fan base, hey, we got the guy who's really responsible for the number one seed in the NFC. And when in reality, I mean, look at how much success Indianapolis had by making that non-sexy hire, the Eagles. You know, they're good coaches out there who all seem to be part of the same tree, but we can't just ignore them when they have a down year.
Yeah, the results get a little overemphasized as opposed to the actual process that goes on during these seasons. But this is a guy I really like, and I do think he deserves another shot as a head coach. Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator in Green Bay, and Andy and I used to argue about this on the show every once in a while. I like the fact that he moves guys around so much, especially the young guys there. I think it does end up I think it ends up being linked to the teaching. When you play a bunch of different positions, you therefore end up understanding what different positions are responsible for on the back end. And I think that's why you've sort of seen that that unit sort of gel so much this year in Green Bay.
Yeah, and another check mark in his column for me is that he spent his downtime wisely. Like, there are coaches that get fired and then don't do anything, and there are coaches that get fired and go hang out with Dave Aranda down at LSU, right? And that's where you should have been. You know, if you were an out-of-work defensive coach, it's exactly where you should have been. You should have been there. You should have been at Wisconsin with Jim Leonard. You should have been with all these guys learning how to stop run pass option football, you know, whatever you're going to call this era of offense. And he did that. And I think that you're seeing him incorporate a lot of what the good things that he learned from Rex Ryan, that simulated pressure stuff on defense, the way that he's able to create pressure with three or four man pressure rushes. All that stuff is super in vogue right now and super important. And you have that perspective. I mean, he built a good staff in Cleveland. Kyle Shanahan was on that staff. John DeFilippo was on that staff. He has an eye for good coaches. And maybe if he's not on the most cursed franchise in the NFL, maybe he's still a head coach right now.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, Connor, but Mike McCarthy wants you and everyone to know that he is a head coaching candidate again. And look, he very well might be. You know, obviously he's a retread. He was out of football this year. He was in the running for a couple jobs last year. Didn't get any. But I don't know. I mean, you said it with Pettine. If you spend your year off doing some good things, Norv Turner is another guy who's sort of you know, when he came back with Carolina after a year off. He was doing things that you never would have thought Norv Turner would implement in his kind of offense.
Yeah, and yeah, so you can't, you know, I can't bang McCarthy for doing the same thing that I said was good for Pettine to do. And, you know,
he's just very much wanting everyone to know that he's doing it.
And credit to our former boss, the creator of the MMQB, Peter King, who spent time with McCarthy, wrote a really good column, I thought, for Football Morning in America last week about his rebirth and his processes and stuff like that. And I think if you're an owner, it's up to you to figure out how much of this is genuine, you know. And, you know, Green Bay's success this year, I don't know if that scares you off, that they went from stuck in the mud to the number, possibly the number one seed in the NFC after they fire you. But I don't think it makes him a bad coach. I just think it's probably a safe hire for a team that for a team that's worried about stuff like that. And listen, same thing with Minnesota. I would say that Green Bay is the number one organization historically for a while where search firms go to find coaches. And, you know, it's an easy sell for owners. They can go in there and say the Packer way, this guy was a head coach for whatever, however long he was a head coach, winningest coach in the NFC when he was fired, won a Super Bowl. And I think it's just a really easy sell. And then what he's doing now, which is getting out there, the fact that he's more analytics focused and he's spending time with younger coaches, it's a kind of the cherry on top of the sundae. I wouldn't be surprised if he lands a job this offseason.
Yeah, he is. Look, he is a tough sell to a fan base. I'll absolutely recognize that. The thing that's going to be really interesting if he were to get another job is there is just this kind of undercurrent, kind of whispers about, was he continuing to run that same offense he always ran because that's what Aaron Rodgers wanted to run? Aaron Rodgers, you know, when you run like a lot of 11 personnel and you don't use a lot of motion before the snap, and it just allows your quarterback to go out there and make a bunch of decisions before the snap, and then on top of that, sort of improvise off that. It's much easier to improvise off those sort of static formations. Is that why he kept doing it, or did he keep doing it because that's what he knows and that's what he's going to continue to do when he gets his next job?
Exactly. I mean, are you really willing to change, or do you want us to think that you're willing to change so you can just come back in and run the same offense? It'll be really interesting.
Ron Rivera's out there. I mean, look, the favor that the Panthers kind of did for him during that sort of weird dance they did where they fired him and then they were like, thank you, Coach Rivera. And it's like, well, fired him. He didn't like it that much. Yeah. You would have not fired him.
Yeah.
But he does get to sort of get out there and get going on his job search here. And I mean, look, he is, again, we talk about all these guys and look at the scheme they run and that sort of thing. I don't know if there's anything you would point to in Carolina and say this was revolutionary, but he almost always had a quality defense, which is his side of the ball, and he just always had competitive teams there.
Yeah, and I thought another guy who worked well with his GM to get personnel to fit the system. They were constantly drafting players that he could utilize. I would say that with one team in particular in mind, he's sort of catnip to a certain type of owner, right? Who wants that legacy sort of feel, wants a coach with a deep NFL background, wants a coach that's made a Super Bowl. Maybe wants a coach, the only coach who is willing to work with Dave Gettleman again. You know, so there's certainly something to be said about that. I think too, it'll be interesting to see how much defense comes back into a trend this offseason. You know, now that everybody's sort of tired themselves out trying to find the next Sean McVay, maybe it's time to just find more guys who can stop him. And so I think Rivera puts himself at the front of the line in that sense too.
Yeah, that's the other. Just stepping back real quick on what this season was. I mean, Greg Roman is sort of the top offensive mastermind of the 2019 season, and he does not look like Sean McVay. He is not as young as Sean McVay, and like it's just not that same buzz with him.
Yeah, it's and that's what is so, like, at the end of the day, that's what's such a bummer about this whole thing is. People who cover the sport, you just you the same guys for years and years and years. You hear this guy's going to be a great head coach, and it just never happens for one reason or another. People said that about Bruce Arians. People said that about Frank Reich. People said that about Mike Zimmer for 10 years. You know, why isn't this guy becoming head coach? Because they're hard to sell. Arians ended up being easy to sell, very easy to sell. He was a likable guy, but people just didn't want to listen. And I think we're in that phase again where it's all about optics. I mean, you know, if the Chargers make the horrendous decision, I think, to move on from their head coach, that is going to be a completely optics-based hire. We need to put butts in the seats, and this is the person who's going to do it, you know? And that's what this is becoming, which is just, I mean, you know, I think people would argue against me, but I would say Gruden was the same way. This was a hire for optics. It was to sell season tickets. But who knows? You know, there's a lot of good coaches out there.
Mike McDaniel, the run game coordinator for the 49ers, obviously the Shanahan tree, but he can go back to the Washington staff, that star-studded Washington staff with McVay and Kyle Shanahan and the LaFleurs. He was part of that staff.
And, you know, really was on the ground floor of a lot of the kind of the cool stuff that Shanahan does with his zone running system. He orchestrates that now. And, you know, you have Tevin Coleman, but made a star out of Raheem Mostert. Matt Breida, has reinvigorated the fullback in all of our lives. I mean, who doesn't want to talk to this guy? I mean, as we noted, has you know, some issues in his past that he's come out and talked about, has, you know, recovered from. I think that's maybe part of what you're looking for as an owner, is someone who's willing to admit mistakes, who has been through some stuff. But either way, I mean, I think that's an under the radar name that I would at least consider. He doesn't have that offensive coordinator title, but you're never going to get a guy really that you're never going to get as close to Kyle Shanahan, I think, as Mike. So I think I think it would be a good hire.
Byron Leftwich, the offense coordinator in Tampa Bay. You know, you just mentioned Bruce Arians and how Bruce Arians became such an easy sell for a fan base. Leftwich is absolutely Arians' guy, and you saw what happened in Arizona last year, and obviously that was just that was a disaster from the start. Leftwich took over midseason for Mike McCoy out there as offense coordinator, but he has sort of reestablished himself as a legitimate future head coaching candidate in Tampa Bay Jameis has his days where he's going to throw six picks, but overall that Bucs offense has been really good this year.
I think they're second in passing yards, right? This year, second or third, they're top three in passing yards this season, and that matters. I think if he did what he did this year last year, and that desire for owners to create that sort of high volume passing offense, which was really hot at that time, you know, I think it would have been a no brainer. But I still think that the connection with Arians and all that stuff, I think he's going to get a chance to interview some teams, as he should. I mean, anybody that can handle, you know, the Jameis coaster as well as he has deserves some consideration. Yeah.
No, and that was Bruce Arians. You know, you say how he just begged Leftwich to get into coaching and that he'd be a head coach one day, and now here we are. It's happening. Mike Kafka, quarterback's coach in Kansas City, obviously, sort of on the masthead, he is behind Eric Bieniemy at this point. But when you're the quarterback's coach for Patrick Mahomes, people notice you.
Yeah, young guy, was drafted by Andy Reid, I think. Has kind of been with him ever since. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot to like about him, probably a name two or three years down the road, but someone that I wouldn't be surprised if an owner kind of reached down and said, hey, I wonder if we can bring him in. And it's a situation where you can't block him and say that he can't go. But I don't know. I think that would be interesting. I think in 3 years, no doubt. Right. I mean, by 2022, there's zero question that if the Chiefs continue on at this clip, he's a head coach somewhere in the NFL.
Oh, with all the Northwestern people in our industry, I mean, he's got so many allies out there. He'll be pumped up plenty.
Imagine if there's a good head coach from Syracuse ever. He would be the safest. Well, I guess Doug Marrone.
I was going to say we have one, Doug Marrone.
That's true.
Connor and I are both Syracuse guys, by the way.
And everybody else in the media, so you know he would have had some help.
I've got my Paul Pasqualoni piece all prepped and ready to go. Just got to hit publish.
That's right.
Leslie Frazier. I mean, Leslie Frazier, he's the defense coordinator for the Bills. Now, two things working against him. One, I mean, you know, he's behind Sean McDermott. Obviously, McDermott gets a lot of credit for what happens defensively in the Bills. But and the second thing, I shouldn't say it works against him. It works against him, but kind of unfairly. It's like he got his shot, and it didn't go great. But it didn't go disastrously badly. And, like, all of a sudden, I don't know what happened. He was just, like, forever, like, oh, not a head coach. We're, like, we're not gonna do this again.
Yeah, I think almost like another Vikings coach, sort of Brad Childress, who was thought of as a really smart guy, who had sort of a ho-hum tenure, made the playoffs that one year. I think he was the head coach that game where the Vikings were essentially, like, Adrian Peterson and 10 guys. And like Joe Webb might have been their quarterback when they were in the playoffs that year. So, I mean, he's dealt with some injury issues. I don't know how deep some of those rosters were beyond Peterson. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think that even with Daboll, there's something interesting going on in that building in terms of the culture that they're building there, how they've gotten everybody to sort of row in one direction. And so I'd be interested in bringing him in. And I don't think it's bad necessarily to, you know, with all these staffs getting younger, is to get a guy with some experience who can get tenured coordinators and coaches to come and work with him. And I think Frazier's another one of those guys where has been well liked, and I don't know, maybe it's time to just kind of kick the tires on that again and see what's going on.
I was gonna say the guy did win 10 games and went to the playoffs with Christian Ponder as his quarterback, so
yeah,
there's something said for that. Let's go. Okay, and now we're down into the college names here. First one, Lincoln Riley. I mean, obviously, we heard plenty about Lincoln Riley last offseason, and does anyone have the $1 billion to get Lincoln Riley to leave Norman, Oklahoma, and come do his thing in the NFL? I mean, look, I think pretty much anyone in the league would jump at the chance to, considering what he did there with three quarterbacks in 3 years with the Sooners. Anyone's going to jump at the chance to get him if they can get him.
Yeah, my guess is would be Jerry Jones is the only person willing to do that, and I don't know if that's where Lincoln wants to make his first move in the NFL. You'd have to deal with a very unique set of circumstances, but a good roster. You know, I actually mapped this out. He's not going to be any closer to home. I think he's from like Lubbock, Texas. So he's not going to be any closer to home as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys than he would be the head coach of the University of Oklahoma. It's like 5.5 hours, almost exactly to the minute from both destinations. So, yeah. So let's check that off.
don't have to show that Oklahoma passport when when you go back and forth or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a hot name right now. Is it akin to long-term hiring Chip Kelly, where it's a good idea for 2 years and the offense is effective for 2 years, and then does he have another trick up his sleeve? You don't know. And would you rather see him re-evolve in Oklahoma before you make the move and basically let him get bored there? Because right now, you know, I think it was Bruce Feldman over at The Athletic who said, you know, he's got recruits lined up for years and years and years, and he can turn this thing into a powerhouse, which is kind of what you want to do as a big-time college coach. Does he want to see that through before making the jump, I think, is going to be the question.
Yeah, yeah. Matt Rhule of Baylor. It sounds like he's going to get a job. It sounds like he is basically the, I think of all the college guys, the most likely to make the jump to the NFL.
Yeah, got to the doorstep with the Jets last year and basically just didn't take it because they weren't going to let him pick his assistants, which is crazy if you're the Jets, right? Like, why would you ask someone to do that? I think it's good too that he has the 1 year in the NFL, and a lot of people roll their eyes at that. He always the assistant offensive line coach for the Giants in 2013 or whatever, 2014, 2012. You know, that was an offensive line that did a lot with not a whole bunch of talent, that took a lot of mid to late round picks and that did good things. He's coached both sides of the ball, which I think owners really like in his career, even though he's kind of evolved as an offensive guy. And to me, what would be most important is, again, that the access to smart college coordinators that might be able to come up and be your offensive coordinator.
Urban Meyer, he was in Dan Snyder's booth. I don't know if anyone covered that. It was barely shown. They showed Urban Meyer more than they showed Robert Saleh this past weekend during NFL games. And look, there was a report floated out there, which I'm sure Urban had a hand in, saying, like, you know, he's happy with life now. But is he happy with life now, or is he basically just driving his price tag up to just some ungodly amount, knowing that Washington and Dallas will be in on the bidding?
Yeah, thirstiest head coach of the cycle award goes to Urban Meyer. And remember, he publicly campaigned for the Dallas job. He said he wanted it before I think the backlash forced him to sort of step down on that. But to me, Washington makes the most sense if you follow the tea leaves on the fact that, you know, there's the whispers that Bruce Allen might be out, or that, you know, he's not going to be in the same role. And to me, that's Daniel Snyder saying, hey, if someone wants to come and run this whole thing, you know, come and talk to me. And Urban Meyer is the kind of guy that I think might require that level of control in order to come in. He's coached the quarterback. He's coached their number one wide receiver. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting. I don't know if it would be necessarily successful, but I'd like to see it happen just for the...
It would give us a lot to write about and talk about going into the year.
Yeah, and Alex Smith's there, so they can all hang out. They can run some more Utah
plays.
Oh,
there you
go.
I forgot about Alex Smith.
I don't know.
Alex Smith.
What's your take on Urban? Do you think that he could translate to the NFL?
I'm skeptical of any of the big time college guys making the jump. I just think there's something to be said for look, when he coached in the Big Ten, I'm not going to sit here and say Urban Meyer can't coach or something, but the athletes he's bringing into Columbus compared to the athletes brought into the other Big Ten schools, you should just never lose a game. You're just so much better than your opponent every week. And obviously he does really good things offensively. And again, I'm not saying he can't coach, but when the talent level is as even as it is across the NFL, which we all kind of lose track of sometimes because we get so worked up over over our draft big boards and whatever else there might be, it brings a different challenge. And you know, are you a leader of grown men? There's just a lot of factors that create a lot of volatility with college coaches. And you saw Nick Saban. Nick Saban was not a winner in the NFL. He might have been had he stayed longer, but that was not immediate success.
I think if you're a college coach too, you're battling. Saban set the grounds for, whether or not it's true, you're immediately battling the perception that you're going to be too over-controlling, right? And even if you do something that's even the least bit controlling, it gets amplified because of the idea that too many of these guys are too controlling, right? Look at what happened to Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. I think that could happen to Urban, where like even something that's misconstrued as vaguely controlling all of a sudden turns him into, you know, tall Napoleon. He's tall, Urban Meyer. He's a taller guy, right?
Is he? I thought he was like 6'2", something like that. I didn't think he was particularly tall.
I mean, I'm 5'7", so he's he's a pretty tall guy.
He's taller than both of us.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to be 6'2".
I think everyone on this list was, though, unfortunately. But last one, we've reached name 24. This is an Urban Meyer disciple here, Dan Mullen, who coached under Urban and then went off and built a winner in Starkville, coached Dak Prescott there, of course, and now he's back at Florida. But if you had your heart set on Urban Meyer and he decides he truly does not want to coach in 2020, why not give Dan Mullen a call?
Yeah, I like the Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network has been banging this drum for a while, to the point where, it's like, wow, I mean, maybe people should start listening. And it's true. I mean, he's an Urban Meyer protege that probably, if you're an owner, doesn't command the type of power that Urban Meyer, you would need to give Urban Meyer to get him in the building, right? So maybe you get a lot of the good without having to sacrifice too much. And if you're Dallas, I mean, I don't know if you're worried about the optics of hiring your quarterback's college coach at a desperate time, but especially Jerry Jones, I think he's looking at what he's done in the past, right? And what worked was hiring a hot college coach to come in and re-energize his roster, but still a guy that would give him control of and allow him to run things the way that he wanted them run. So at least for a little while. And I think Mullen checks that box. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think more people should at least be considering that fact. He was asked about it recently. And said that he's never been contacted by an NFL team before, but that it would be something he'd be interested in, but that he's happy there in Florida, blah, 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 all that stuff. But I don't know. Yeah. It sounds like it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I'm frantically scrolling through the list of current head coaches. Former college guy, Cliff Kingsbury, obviously.
Yep.
Doug Marrone,
mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else who was a college head coach? Among the our readers or excuse me our listeners can weigh
we're
in
gonna
on
get
this,
picked but, apart here yeah there's gonna be like one super obvious one that we're not thinking
I was gonna
of.
Say,
like Bill Pat
Belichick
Shermer had like a year at,
yeah
Pat Shermer was like once the head coach at Southern Miss and we're just not remembering it or something.
Yeah, I don't see anyone else who was a collegiate head coach here on among the current list. And you just think, you know, Chip Kelly, Steve Spurrier. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's just a riskier thing than most people realize, plucking a guy out of the college game.
Higher risk, higher reward. All I know is, put together this list with 24 names. If someone gets hired that's not on this list, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the two names that it would probably be, right, are Dan Campbell. The two names that I've gotten the most hate mail from not including on the list are Dan Campbell, tight ends assistant head coach for the Saints, and Matt Eberflus from the defensive coordinator
right.
of the Colts.
I was ready to bang you on Eberflus, but considering what's going on, you talk about putting too much weight on what's going on recently. I have sort of covered my head and curled into the fetal position when it comes to my Eberflus fandom.
You know,
considering what's happened the last 2 weeks with that defense.
Every year I think I've nailed it, and I remember this is like 3 years ago, someone said, "Hey, Sean McVay in Washington, I think someone's going to hire a 30-year-old head coach." And I was just like, "Aha." And then didn't put him on the list. And then, of course, he gets the Rams job. I know this is going to happen again this year. That's why I made the list so damn long, because I can't stand it when a coach gets hired that's not on the list. But I think we have all good names. I think there's at least a good reason for an owner to talk to every single one of these people.
Yeah, and can I give you, before we go, one more note here? I know a lot of you started to type this after I said send in your names that we missed as far as college coaches making the jump to the NFL. There is a guy we missed, and he is a coach and alma mater of one of our coworkers, Connor. Do you want to take a quick guess?
Recent
as well. Not like in the 80s.
Oh, Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien.
Bob.
Yep.
Forgot
there
about
go.
Bob. That's right. Good for
yeah.
him.
Because he's always, Patriots assistant. Nope. He was Penn State right before he came to the Texans. So
that's right.
There you have it.
Go Lions.
That's Nittany Lions. Do they still call them the Lady Lions? Or is that not, that's not cool anymore?
I would
the women's teams there.
I think everybody's just the Lions, right?
I think everyone's
just
too.
A Nittany Lion. Yeah. Like Syracuse, yeah. Everyone's just the Orange.
The Orange. Yep.
We're all Orange,
Yeah. Were you down with that change when they did it?
I think, I never got an explanation as to what an Orangeman was, ever. Did you?
It has something to do with the House of Orange in, is it the Netherlands? I should probably know this. There was a time when I knew it, but I don't think I know it anymore.
I heard that Orange had something to do with because the Irish flag is like green for Catholic and orange for Protestant, and white is the marriage between the two of them. This could be totally false, by the way. I could just be making this up. And that orange had something to do with that. I heard it was also connected to, right, because there's a ton of Native American tribes over there, and then it was somehow connected to there. They used to be the Saltine Warriors. back way long time ago.
They were originally like pink and green, right? For the school colors?
Like pink and pea soup green. I'd like to see a Nike dial up a Jim Boeheim. Yeah. for the Big East tournament, pea green and pink. Yeah.
There you go.
In my senior year, Nancy Kander, the chancellor, tried to change the school colors from orange and white to like orange and burnt orange, and everything got like the whole website changed. I think this is true. The whole website changed, and then there was like a brief 2-day panic where like the football team was literally going to be the vomit combination of orange and burnt orange moving forward, which would have been horrible. They should just go back to their old jerseys.
Oh, man.
Go back to the old Donovan McNabb.
Orange and white.
Yeah. Looks good.
Yeah.
Looks good.
Well, that's our 2 cents there. So if anyone with actual money among the Syracuse alumni want to weigh in on this and get something done, please do. But as for this show, that's a wrap. The MMQB NFL Thursday show is me, Gary Gramling. Thanks to Connor Orr for joining us this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.